So when he sees rise and fall, so with the paragraph 100 and so on, he explains the truth, dependent origination and others. So when he sees rise and fall in the two ways, according to condition and according to instant, thus, the truth of origination becomes evident to him. The truth of origination means the second noble truth, the origin of suffering. So the truth of origination becomes evident to him through seeing rise according to condition, owing to his discovery of the progenitor. So when he sees the rise and fall in two ways, according to condition and according to instant, then the second truth becomes evident to him. The truth of suffering becomes evident to him through seeing rise and fall according to instant. Now here, according to instant, owing to his discovery of the suffering due to birth. Now, we should say suffering which is birth. Suffering and birth are same here, not due to birth. The truth of cessation becomes evident to him through seeing fall according to condition, owing to his discovery of the non-arising of things produced by conditions when their conditions do not arise. The truth of suffering becomes evident to him too through seeing fall according to instant, owing to his discovery of the suffering which is death. And his seeing of rise and fall becomes evident to him as the truth of the path. Thus, this is the mundane path owing to abolition of confusion about it. So, all the four noble truths become evident to him through seeing rise and fall of the aggregates in two ways, according to condition and according to instant. And then the dependent origination in forward order becomes evident to him through seeing rise according to condition, owing to his discovery that when this exists, that comes to be. The dependent origination in reverse order becomes evident to him through seeing fall according to condition, owing to his discovery that when this does not exist, that does not come to be. Dependently arisen states become evident to him through seeing rise and fall according to instant, owing to his discovery of the characteristic of the formed. For the things possessed of rise and fall are formed and conditionally arisen. So, seeing five aggregates, seeing the rise and fall of five aggregates in these ways, make him understand more clearly the dependent origination in forward order, in reverse order, and also the states mentioned in the dependent origination, which are called dependently arisen states. That means actually all that are mentioned in the dependent origination. Everything mentioned in the dependent origination arise from some other conditions. So they are all dependently arisen states. Now, the method of identity becomes evident to him through seeing rise according to condition and so on. Do you remember the four methods with which to understand the dependent origination? We go back to the chapter 17, paragraph 309. Then there are four methods of treating the meaning here. They are method of identity, the method of diversity, the method of uninterest, and the method of ineluctable regularity. So these are the four methods by which we should understand dependent origination or understand things. So they are these methods are also become evident to him who sees rise and fall of aggregates in two ways. So the method of identity becomes evident to him through seeing rise according to condition, owing to his discovery of unbroken continuity in the connection of cause with fruit. So there is a connection of cause and fruit, or cause and effect. So when one sees the rising according to condition, that means because there is this condition, and there is the fruit. Because this is a condition, there is the fruit of it, and so on. So when he sees this, he understands it by way of the method of identity. That means there is a continuation of cause and effects. And then he more thoroughly abandons the annihilation view. When he sees this, he abandons the annihilation view. That means he abandons the view that a being is annihilated as death. No more, nothing arises after death. So he abandons this view when he sees arising according to condition, because there is the condition, and that which arises depending on that condition. So this condition and fruit, condition and fruit connection goes on and on and on. So there is some kind of identity in this continuity. The method of diversity becomes evident to him through seeing rise according to instant. At every instant there is arising. So owing to it's his discovery that each state is new as it arises. Although there is some kind of identity, some kind of continuity, everyone is a new one. So, since everything is new, new at every moment, and there is no permanency in the states. So when he sees rising according to instant, then he can abandon the eternity view that things are permanent. Because at every moment there is a new thing arising, and so and all things disappearing, so there can be no permanency in these states. So he sees that. The method of uninterestedness becomes evident to him through seeing rise and fall according to condition, owing to his discovery of the inability of states to have mastery exercised over them. Then he more thoroughly abandons the self view. Now self means, if it is to be called self, then it must be able to exercise its authority over it. But now they just rise and fall. The states just rise and fall. And nobody can exercise authority over them, say, to be permanent or whatever. So when he sees rising and falling according to condition, then he is able to abandon the self view, and the view that there is a permanent self. The method of ineluctable regularity becomes evident to him through seeing rise according to condition, owing to his discovery of the arising of the fruit when the suitable conditions are there. There he more thoroughly abandons the moral inefficacy of action view. That means whatever you do does not amount to karma, something like that. So he is able to abandon that view because he sees the arising of aggregates, or arising of states, according to conditions. Okay, because of this condition, there is this fruit, and this fruit is from this condition only, and not from any other condition. And so he is able to abandon the wrong view that even though you do something, you don't amount to doing anything, any karma or whatever. Now, the characteristic of not self becomes evident to him through seeing rise according to condition, owing to its discovery that states have no curiosity. Oh, we have finished the four methods with regard to the dependent origination. Now, characteristics. So, the states of no curiosity really means no effort of their own, and that their existence depends upon conditions. Now, in this paragraph, there are two things which we should note, and that is characteristic of individual essence, that is down the paragraph, and the characteristic of what is formed. I want you to understand these two. Characteristic of individual essence and characteristic of what is formed. Characteristic of individual essence means characteristic of the characteristics which they do not share with any other state, like say contact. Contact has the characteristic of impinging on the object, and that characteristic is of contact only and not of feeling, not of perception, and so on. So they are called individual characteristic or individual essence. And the characteristic of what is formed means the impermanence, suffering, and no self nature. They are called characteristic of what is formed. They are actually common characteristic of conditioned phenomena. So everything that is conditioned has these three characteristics: the arising, presence, and dissolution. And a yogi comes to see both characteristic of individual essence and the characteristic of what is formed when he practices vipassana meditation. So these two become evident to him owing to his discovery of the non-existence of fall at the instance of rise and the non-existence of rise at the instance of fall. When there is rising, there is no falling. When there is no falling, there is no rising. So when he discovers this, then the characteristic of what is form and characteristic of individual essence become clear to him. Now, here only rise and fall are mentioned, and not the intermediate states, right? So the footnote says, 32, the inclusion of only rise and fall here is because this kind of knowledge occurs as seeing only rise and fall, not because of non-existence of the instant of presence. Because in vipassana, the yogi see only rising and falling. That is why rising and falling are mentioned here, not because the intermediate stage is non-existent. There is intermediate state which is called presence. But in vipassana meditation, only rising and disappearing are seen by yogis. That is why these two only are mentioned. When the different truth aspects of the independent origination methods and characteristics have become evident to him thus, then formations appear to him as perpetually renewed. I want to say always new instead of saying perpetually renewed, because they are not renewed actually. At every moment there is a new phenomenon existing. Not that something is renewed.
Then how do things stay the same? Okay, first of all, do you mean that both mind and matter, all states are always new? Mm. Then how do things stay the same? And how do they know, how does the glass know to keep staying glass if it's continually stopping and then starting over again?
Yeah. The in the place of the old one which has disappeared, a new one takes its place. It's of the same nature.
Yeah, because we talked about that they have a nature.
Yeah, of the same nature, of the same kind, but let us say something like not one class, say many classes. So when one class disappears, then you put another class there. So it is we can say it is same in the sense that and the one disappeared is a glass and the one which is now there is also a glass, but they are different. Mm-hmm. The one is removed and the other is put in its place. So in the same way, one material property disappears and another takes its place, another of the same kind or similar kind. So these states, it seems, being previously unarisen, arise, and being arisen, they cease. And they are not only perpetually renewed, or they are not only always new, but they are also short-lived, like dewdrops at sunrise, like a bubble on water, like a line drawn on water, like a mustard seed on an awl's point, like a lightning flash, and they appear without core, like a conjuring trick, like a mirage, like a dream, like a circle of a falling firebrand. And this simile is not mentioned in the discourses, so we cannot trace them. Like a goblin city, like froth, like a planting trunk, and so on. Now, goblin city, you know goblin city? It is like a city, see, created by goblins or ghosts or some spirits. So sometimes you find yourself in a house, in a big building, and then next morning you find yourself lying on the earth, on the ground, and nothing of the house you experienced during the night could be seen. So that kind of experience happened to many people. I don't know if they have been here too. So they are called goblin city. That means just the cities or whatever made to appear as real, say, to human beings. Maybe in the movies too, you find something like this. Say a person enters a house and he enjoys the food or whatever in the house, and in the morning he finds himself lying on the ground, something like that. So that is called a goblin city. Then at this point he has attained tender inside knowledge. Now it is still tender. Called contemplation of rise and fall, which has become established by penetrating the 50 characteristics in this manner. Only what is subject to fall arises, and to be arisen necessitates fall. I don't think that is acceptable. Only what is subject to fall arises, and what has arisen naturally falls, something like that. With the attainment of this, he is known as a beginner of insight. Only when you attain to this stage are you called a beginner of insight. Before that, you are not a you are not an official beginner of insight. Now, imperfections of insight, or impediments of insight. So when a person, when a yogi reaches this stage, then the 10 imperfections or impurities of insight arise in him. So these are the obstacles to progress, obstacles to attainment, obstacles to enlightenment. Because if a yogi takes them to be enlightenment, then he would not practice any further, and so he will not get to enlightenment. So these are called here imperfections, or in Pali they are called the impurities of insight. And there are 10 of them. They are given as one, illumination, two, knowledge, three, rapturous happiness, that means PD, four, tranquility, five, bliss, pleasure, sukha, six, resolution, seven, exertion, eight, assurance, I would say establishment, and nine, equanimity, and ten, attachment. So these ten things happen or arise to a person who has reached this stage of contemplating of rise and fall. And these do not arise either in a noble disciple who has reached penetration of the truth. That means who has gained enlightenment, or in persons erring in virtue, neglectful of their meditation subject and idlers. So they arise only to those who are practicing meditation, who keeps to the right course, devotes himself continuously to his meditation subject, and is a beginner of insight. So these ten will not arise in noble ones, and also in those who do not practice meditation. And there are ten. And then these ten are explained one by one, right? So let's go to illumination. Now, illumination is illumination due to insight. When it arises, the meditator thinks such illumination never arose in me before. I have surely reached the path, reached fruition. Thus he takes what is not a path to be the path, and what is not fruition to be fruition. When he takes what is not the path to be path, and what is not fruition to be fruition, the course of his insight is interrupted, because he will not practice anymore. He drops his own basic meditation subject and sits just enjoying the illumination. Now this illumination arises in one bhikkhu illuminating only as much as the seat he is sitting on. In another, the interior of his room, in another, the exterior of his room, in another, the whole monastery, a quarter league, a half league, a league, 2 leagues, 3 leagues. In another bhikkhu it arises making a single light from earth's surface up to the Brahma wall. But in the Blessed One, it arose illuminating the 10,000 fold world elements. And there is a story. Now, please read the footnote. Illumination due to insight is a luminous materiality originated by insight consciousness, and that originated by temperature belonging to his own continuity, that means in his body. Of these, that originated by insight consciousness is bright and is found only in the meditator's body. The other kind is independent of his body. I don't want to say that. The other kind leaves his body and spreads all around according to the power of his knowledge. Yeah, the translation is not so good. So the other kind leaves his body and spreads all around according to the power of his knowledge. And it is manifest to him only, not true. It becomes manifest. I would say it is manifest to him only, and he sees anything material in the place touched by it. So the illumination is manifest only to him. Others won't see the illumination. And he sees anything immaterial in the place touched by it. But he would see things illuminated by that bright light. And then the sub-commentary raises a question. Does he see with the eye consciousness or mind consciousness? And then he said, it should be said to be mind consciousness, seeing with mind consciousness. That means he does not see with his eyes, with his physical eyes, but with his mind he sees things touched by or illuminated by that bright light. And then the story of two elders. And next is knowledge. Knowledge is knowledge due to insight. As he is estimating and judging material and immaterial states, perhaps knowledge that is unerring. Unerring means undeterred. Keen, incisive, and very sharp arises in him, like a lightning flash. And then piti, rapturous happiness, is happiness due to insight. Perhaps at that time, the five kinds of happiness, namely minor happiness, momentary happiness, showering happiness, uplifting happiness, and pervading rapturous happiness, arise in him, filling his whole body. You remember the five mentioned earlier in the chapters? Chapter 4, paragraph 94 and so on. Then tranquility. Then bliss, resolution, exertion, and then assurance. Assurance is literally establishment. So assurance really means mindfulness. His mindfulness is very strong at this point. And then equanimity is about insight and equanimity in adverting. For equanimity about insight, which is neutrality about formation, see strongly in him at that time. So does equanimity in adverting in the mind door. Not it is also. So does equanimity in adverting in the mind door. That means equanimity in adverting in the mind door also arises strongly in him. And then attachment. That is real attachment. Now, paragraph 124. Here, illumination, etc., are called imperfections because they are the basis for imperfection, not because they are karmically unprofitable, not because they are akusala. But attachment is both an imperfection and the basis for imperfection. So the last one is real akusala, because it is lower attachment. The other nine are not akusala, but they are ground for akusala, they are conditions for akusala. Because when the yogi has an illumination, then he will be attached to his illumination, and so on. And as basis, they amount to 10, but with the different ways of taking them, they come to 30. So by false view, by conceit, and then by attachment, by way of attachment, they become 30. So each one can be taken by way of false view, by way of conceit, and by way of attachment. And then a skillful meditator is not deceived by these. So he sees that they are impermanent and so on, and they are not the right path to attainment, to enlightenment. So he decides here that the illumination and so on are not the right path, but the practice of vipassana only is the right path. So he decides this, and when he decides this and this knowledge is established in him, then he is said to have reached the knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path. So a yogi, after reaching the contemplation of rise and fall, will encounter these impediments. And when he encounters these impediments, he must be able to see them as impediments and not as the signs of enlightenment and so on. If he takes them to be signs of enlightenment, then he will stop there and he will not go any further, and so he will be deprived of the progress in insight and enlightenment. And then at this point, the three truths are defined and so on. So this is the end of the chapter 20. and the vipassana knowledge called contemplation of it is not the end of contemplation of rise and fall. We'll have to go further with the contemplation of rise and fall, but one purity ends here. That is the purification by knowledge and vision of what is path and what is not path. Because the yogi is practicing contemplation on rise and fall, and when he reaches to a certain level of the contemplation of rise and fall, these impediments came. When he is disturbed by these impediments, he could not see rise and fall really very clearly. So he has to practice again to see rise and fall clearly. So the contemplation of rise and fall does not end here. It will go over to the next chapter. But the purification of the knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path ends here. So there is overlapping of purity and vipassana knowledges. So if you look at this this handout, you will see it clearly. Oh yes, please look at that.
Could you have another one?
No.
Could you explain some way that we could work with seeing rise and fall? Is it like reaching, and then falling, and then picking up rising? That's it. Or should I be looking at the consciousness?
But at first, we do not try to see the rising and falling. We try to get concentration.
2 weeks ago,
good concentration. So we try to be mindful of what's happening at the present moment, and then later on, the arising and disappearing of things you observe will become evident to you. So what is important is to get a necessary amount of concentration, and as your concentration gets better, then you will come to see the arising and falling. First, we have to see the thing clearly, right? And then after that, we say, oh, this is arising, this is falling, or it is not arising, it is not falling. But before we see the real arising and falling, we have to see the thing itself.
Is it possible to get the tapes from this class? Copies of the tapes from this class to study as we go along?
Yeah.
From your comments.
I can make copies.
Could you make copies of the ones that we made for just this class?
Today?
And I would pay from, the last three classes. We just started three times ago.
Yes.
Thank you. Four times.
For the center. This is going to take this. The other lady who's absent today, she always takes
the
tape.
Oh, you want me to make one?
This is for the center.
Oh, I see.